want to welcome on the phone now Dr. Justin McGregor. Good afternoon, Justin.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me on.
No, you're more than welcome. We're going to talk about this play, and it's very interesting what I know about it. The Tears Fall Not. Before that, will you tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe mention Gary, who contacted us?
I'm a playwright. I've been putting on what we call Theatre of the Real, so plays that are inspired by real events and true stories. And it really started with a couple of plays about my great uncles who were Irish and Welsh and their service in World War II. And it's something I've continued on, and then came across this story. I guess I was here in 2011 when they were discussing pardoning Irish soldiers who'd served with the British in World War II. And I was like, excuse me, what was that?
Yeah.
Sort of began researching this incredible story.
Yeah, and the play. Tell us a little bit about the play.
Yeah, so the play is about, I've been thinking long and hard about sort of how to approach the topic, and but I decided, I had a friend who's a war correspondent who served in Afghanistan and Iraq, and so what I decided was to have two generations, to have a grandfather in his 80s who served in World War II and came back to be blacklisted and isolated for fighting alongside the British against Hitler. And then his granddaughter, who is a nurse who's gone to Iraq, and she's come back with PTSD and is suffering herself as a returned soldier with a lack of support and a lack of care. And the two of them are really trying to save each other.
Yeah, it was actually disgraceful what happened. Irish soldiers coming home to court-martial in shame.
Yes, crazy. Yeah, no, it's really unbelievable. And I mean, I think by the time they pardoned them, there were over 4,900 on what they called the starvation order, which was the list outlining the people who deserted and had gone to serve with the British. And I think only 100 or so were alive by the time the pardon came around in 2012.
Yeah, no, it is. It's madness. And the daughter in the play now, she's also suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, which is also helping out her grandfather. Is that correct?
So she's a nurse. She's returned. She's obviously seen some terrible things in Afghanistan and Iraq, and they've ended up together in the family home. And so she's taking care of him while dealing with her own past. And that research was based a lot on a sort of awful statistic I came across, which was in 2012, that more servicemen and servicewomen in Iraq died from suicide after returning home than died that year in the conflict, which is just a horrific statistic to come across. And so I really sort of wanted to approach this whole idea of people being that serve us and do so much for us, and then when they return, they're very much abandoned by all but their family.
Yeah, no, it's heartbreaking, really, when you think. And this is all based on research and fact.
I've done a lot of research. I'm also a professor here at Trinity, so I've gone through our archives and just going to online. There's a fabulous campaign. Peter Mulvaney started the Irish Soldiers Pardon campaign, and they brought up a lot of the names and found some of these soldiers, like John Stout, who got to see the pardon, who served at D-Day and liberated one of the concentration camps. So found all these incredible personal stories. So I decided to include some of these characters as themselves and then have a lead character who's played by the great Des Keogh as a kind of composite of these idealistic young men who went to serve the greater good when they saw that it was needed.
Yeah, and there was 5,000, I believe, Irishmen.
And yeah, it was 10%. 10% of the Irish forces deserted to join when Ireland obviously remained neutral and went up to Belfast or over to Liverpool and signed up. There were just over, as I say, about 4,981, I think, is the number on this list, which was 133 pages long, and it was sent around the country to train stations and public offices, and they were denied benefits, they were denied their own pensions that they'd earned for their service, and they were denied any government jobs, which was effectively, at that time, it came to be known as the starvation order, because that's what happened to many of the families.
Yeah. And like these people, they were gone off to fight evil, more or less, when you think about it.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, people knew what was going on, and I mean the politics of the time, of course, was to paint them as having sided with the British. But the truth is, there was one young one of the young soldiers had actually, as a child, had smuggled messages for the IRA by cycling around with them in his mouth. And he signed up because he saw, you know, what was going on. So the idea that it was pro-British was sort of one of the fallacies that they that sort of came out. But I think as when the war was over, it was obviously clear that they had done the right thing. But then sort of the politics of the day, they decided to put the men on a list to show that they had feeling that they'd betrayed the Irish Republic.
Right. And it tells a little bit about Come As You Are. I believe you were founder.
It's a company we started, as I say, with a play called The Play That Killed Me, which is about my grandfather and his side of the family in World War II, and then moved on to, this was an amazing story, my father had told me about his service, where he put on a play for the troops at the front just before El Alamein.
Yeah.
And then my mother's side of the family, my uncle signed up as 14 and 15-year-olds. They forged their own birth certificates so they could join their brothers-in-law, who were older than them, in going to war. So it sort of started with that, and then I realized this was just something that really interested me. So I have a friend who was from Rhodesia, who had fought in the Bush War there, and he had amazing stories about how he was raised and the rise of Robert Mugabe, which became another play. And right now I'm working on, my father met Václav Havel, the president of Czechoslovakia, in the 60s when he was very much an aspiring playwright, and they kind of had this lifelong correspondence, so my next play is about that.
So
that's what we focus on, these kind of true stories and real events.
Yeah, I'm just looking here, you've covered a lot of different events around the world, like Robert Mugabe's rise to tyranny.
In
Mugabe land.
Yes, no. It's a play that is illegal in Zimbabwe.
It's imagined so, yeah.
yes, as I say, I had this friend Stuart who actually fought on the side of the white minority government, and then when the war was over, realized he'd been raised on lies, you know, that he'd been raised a racist. And when he left Rhodesia/Zimbabwe, realized what life was really about, who people really were, and kind of had this falling out with his own family, and then had this incredible opportunity in the 90s. He was actually going to meet Robert Mugabe alone and had to decide whether he would take his service revolver and shoot him when he met him, and decided not to. Absolutely remarkable story.
And then there's another one, and How I Helped End Communism.
Yes, and the rest of the title, And Save Democracy for Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. Yeah, no, my best friend and I went behind the Iron Curtain to teach free speech just before it fell. And it was, you know, we were sort of just young, clueless college students when we went. And it was the most eye-opening experience of my life to really see how people were living and under communism, and just to try and help out in whatever little ways we could. Well, I guess it completely changed our lives. So that was, so I wrote a play about this riot. We accidentally started a riot in Warsaw in August of 1989 that we like to think helped lead to the fall of the Iron Curtain.
Right. Very interesting plays and writing there. We'll go back to The Tears That Fall Not. Starring Des Keough, a legend.
Yes. I mean, absolutely. I mean, he was in Ryan's Daughter. I mean, I guess we were talking the other day, and he was like, isn't it 40 years ago? And I was like, yeah, it's 50 years ago. It's 1970. he just did Endgame with Rosaline Linehan that was very successful in the fall. So, yeah, he's just a legend. And I actually, when I was thinking of this part, and thinking of this story, I actually started writing it completely with Des in mind. He had no idea. We met once very, very, very casually outside a Spar. I just thought, God, he would be perfect for this part of this aging Irish soldier, that he would just be ideal. And that he's become very interested in the topic and the story, because so much of it, even the fall of, the liberation of Bergen-Belsen, so much of it was suppressed after the war. As sort of part of being neutral, that people didn't really at the time even fully understand maybe the full scope of what Nazism had been up to and what they'd been doing.
Yeah, no, it is.
So it's amazing to have him involved. Yeah. Sorry.
And it's a very interesting story altogether. And I'm just looking at some of the other actresses and actors as well. We had Jane Purcell from Fair City, I believe.
Yeah, no, she was Cindy in Fair City, and has been doing some years ago, and she's been doing a lot of theatre. She's been in, I think, 5 of my plays now, a really great actress. And her father was actually friends with Des Keough in their 20s before, you know, as very young men.
Yeah.
So nice connection there. And then, yeah, Fiona Brown I've worked with before on Uta, which is the story of the murder of Ken Sarawiwa in the 90s in Nigeria. And she was just nominated, I think, for Best Supporting Actress for Angela's Ashes, which got the Board Gash a little while ago. And then Paul Nugent, who just did Orson Welles' Christmas Carol, that I think was very well just before Christmas. So really great cast. And the way those two work, what I've decided to do is that the grandfather and granddaughter are on stage, and then Fiona and Paul are going to do all the other voices from their past. They're great voiceover actors, and this is kind of based on two parts of research, one into dementia and the other into PTSD.
Yeah.
So people begin to hear these voices from their past, in their memory, but for them it's real, it's not a memory, it's a complete sense. And I was trying to think about what a wonderful thing that might be in the theater, to have two people acting around these voices from their past, becoming real to them, and kind of moving in and out of this memory world and back into the real world, and that's what we're attempting. We'll see how it works on stage, but yeah, I'm very excited.
Yeah, it's a great cast, and it's a great play. And we'll have to tell people where this is happening. It's the Smock Alley Theatre.
Yeah, no, it's part of the Seen and Heard Festival.
Yeah.
So it's this Saturday, the 15th, at 2 p.m. I think tickets are €7 or €6 or €7 in advance, and €8 at the door. So we're doing it as a rehearsed reading. We're bringing in, I know some theatre companies are coming in, and we're hoping that we can use this to launch a tour and a bit of a run in Dublin in late this year or early next year.
Okay, Justin, thank you very much. And is it going to be a run?
That's what we're hoping for. Yeah, we've got a few theatres have contacted us already, so we're getting them to come and see it, and then hopefully we can use that to lock it down. But at the moment, it's the one show only.
Yeah, so get down there. Where are the tickets available, at the door, or is it there?
Yeah, no, they're available through, you can go to the Smock Alley website, which is smockalley.com. And Seen and Heard, and then also they're available through, I think it's tix.ie. is the website that has them for sale as well.
Okay, Justin, anything you'd like to add there now?
No, I just hope people, I hope people can come out. This is one of those forgotten, almost forgotten stories. I mean, obviously, the families know it very well,
yeah.
But this is one of those stories, I think, just important for people to know about as part of moving forward into the future. It's always important to really understand what's gone on in the past. And I think this is something that people should be aware of, and a wrong that is still something that needs to be righted, even beyond the government's pardon.
Yeah, and it is part of history, whether we like it or not.
Absolutely, yeah.
Listen, Justin, thank you very much for taking the call. It was very interesting.
No, thanks very much.
Thank you.